And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. It's good to be with you. 67 degrees driving in. I know I like that. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257 in case you have a question about health. The people that cannot be helped are the ones that do not ask questions. Simple as that. All right, a gentleman called me. He said, is there any hope for Alzheimer's? And I'm going to give you a little bit different take on this, and I want to see what you think about it. So please give me your feedback. Here we go. Researchers from the University of Montreal and the University of Bordeaux discovered that the use of benzodiazepines, such as Xanax and Restoril, if you do not know what those drugs are, they are usually taken or prescribed by a doctor if you have anxiety, if you can't sleep. If you take these two drugs, whether it's Xanax or Restoril, it increases the risk of developing Alzheimer's by 32%. After it's been used for how long? 3 to 6 months. And it goes on to say in the research article that taking these drugs for more than 6 months raises the risk of developing Alzheimer's by 84%. Okay, so before I go on, yes, I get a little bit worn down, maybe even irritable myself when I hear programs saying there's no cures for Alzheimer's. Well, if you don't cause it in the first place, if you knew that there was an activity that you were involved in that's causing you to lose your memory, wouldn't you strongly probably look at yourself in the mirror and say, do I need to continue doing this? I know, but these are doctor-authorized, recommended, prescribed medications. And so just ask yourself the question, have I been taking a sleep medication? Actually, let's say it this way. Did your mother, your father, aunt, brother, sister, relative, cousin, anybody taking Xanax? Well, then you can't be shocked or surprised, because the longer you take it, the more the numbers go up for developing dementia. So the two drugs, Xanax and Restoril, taken for one of two reasons. You have anxiety. You need a sleep aid. It increases the risk of Alzheimer's by 32% after you use it for 3 months. What about if you take it for 6 months or more than 6 months? That's when the risk of developing Alzheimer's goes up to 84%. So this is a concept that's very simple. If you're taking a drug to deal with an issue, did your physician give you any alternatives other than Xanax or Restoril? Well, I'll tell you what, I personally can't afford to lose one more brain cell, so I better keep what I have and try to take good care of it. Okay, here's another study right here. One study from the Scripps Research Institute, led by Dr. Daniel Kripke, that's Kripke with a K, two Ks, he compared data from a sample group of more than 10,000 people taking sleeping pills, including Zolpidem, which is known as Ambien, and Temazepam, which is known as Restoril, with a control group of more than 23,000 people not taking sleeping pills. And I know these numbers are just going to floor you, but here goes. Researchers found that those prescribed as few as 18 doses of sleeping pills a year, that's just 18, so you can say, I went to the doctor, I told him I was stressed and I couldn't sleep, and he recommended that I take Ambien or Restoril. So here's the numbers right here. 18 doses of sleeping pills a year, they had 3 times higher risk of death during the study's 2.5-year follow-up period than their counterparts in the control group that did not take Ambien or Restoril. Of course, they go on to say, with greater mortality or death associated with greater dosage prescribed. Furthermore, those taking the highest dosage of sleeping pills, and that's basically more than 100 and 32 doses of Ambien a year. Folks, I hear this. I'm kind of in a unique situation because I get to be very observant, or sometimes I am very observant, sometimes maybe I'm not. There's room for improvement. But I get to look at all these different situations, and I tend to believe very easily every story, in fact, in detail, that a person tells me. Who's going to walk in my office and lie about taking Ambien? No, they're going to tell you they take it every single night. And then their wife does also. So, here we go. For those taking the highest dosage of sleeping pills, and that's more than 132 doses a year, so if you're taking 133 sleeping pills over the course of a year, they have a 35% increased risk of cancer. And I didn't expect to see that, but when I read this, why would they lie about their study findings? So this comes from the Scripps Research Institute, led by Dr. Daniel Kripke. So if you take more than 132 sleeping pills a year, you're going to have a 35% increased risk of cancer, including lung cancer, lymphoma, prostate, colon cancers. So this association between sleeping pills, cancer rates, and death remained very strong even after controlling for health conditions such as obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. I'm just trying to think, when is the last time we've heard anything about this in the news? Anyway, let me go on right here. I don't know if this is a good one, but I'm going to read it. In 2015, Consumer Reports found that Ambien and Lunesta put people to sleep only about 20 minutes faster on average than a placebo, and they added only 3 to 34 minutes of total sleep time. And I quote, "Their effectiveness is so limited that as of late 2014, they are no longer considered a first-choice treatment for chronic insomnia by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine." Okay, I know this sounds simplistic, but there is a hormone that your body produces called cortisol. Cortisol always increases when you are under perceived stress. If it takes you longer than 3 or 4 or 5 minutes to drift off into sleep when your head hits the pillow, then you've got a problem with cortisol. There is a gland in the brain called the pituitary, at the base of the brain, I should have said. In the pituitary, one unique hormone that your brain makes is called oxytocin. Sometimes it's called the love hormone. Sometimes it's called the bonding hormone. Do human beings need to be touched? Yes. Do husbands need to be touched? Yes. Do wives? Yes. How about children? It would be devastating to raise a child that never gets hugged or kissed or touched. But when you touch and you hug and you kiss and you caress, you release oxytocin. Can you train the pituitary not to release oxytocin? Yeah, you sure can. I think I've told kids in the high school class that there's probably plenty of people that show up for church on Sunday morning. They never get a pat or a touch or a hug or a kiss or anything all week long. So when they come to church on Sunday morning or Sunday evening, maybe we should go out of our way to hug and touch and caress and, you know, love on those older people that never get touched. You've got to have that. And when you're touched, that's when your pituitary, the anterior pituitary, starts to release oxytocin. You know, when a mother gives birth to a baby, oxytocin's completely at play. It causes the milk to let down. She starts caressing and loving and touching the baby. Isn't that exactly what you want? It's a beautiful thing. But you may not be a baby, but you may have a touching deficit. My main point is this. Without touching and hugging and kissing on a level that's good for everyone, I just mean appropriate stuff. I don't mean a... I've had many women describe getting a tremendous bone-crushing bear hug from a husband or from a teenage son that wants to prove that he can still pick up his mama. Yeah, that may not be good to have your ribs broken. I'm not talking about that kind of hug. I'm talking about the kind that you like. But oxytocin has been shown to downregulate or rid the body of stress hormones called cortisol faster than almost anything. This is just an example. If a child that was 2 years old was having a terrible temper tantrum and was just, it just looked bad, I don't have to explain that. What do you do to the child? You pick them up and you hug them and you hold them, and yeah, they may kick and scream and resist you for a few seconds, but not much longer than that, because the moment you start touching the child, their pituitary starts releasing oxytocin, and it quickly gets rid of all that high levels of adrenaline and stress hormones, cortisol. It's good, and you know what? It's free. So, if you can't fall asleep easily in 5 minutes, there's too much stress hormone, cortisol. Oxytocin. I know, you want a drug? Sorry. Real sorry about that. I don't want you developing Alzheimer's. Anyway, all you got to do is start touching others. Start touching. All right. What about over-the-counter sleeping pills if you can't sleep? Procter & Gamble, the maker of a product called ZQIL, estimates that over-the-counter sleeping aid market is more than $500 million and growing fast. Oh, $500 million and growing fast. Well, what is it that helps ZQIL user fall asleep is the active ingredient diphenhydramine. You ever heard of that? Well, it's what's found in Benadryl. And that's the allergy drug that's often taken, not for allergies, but because it makes you drowsy. Dr. Shalani Paruthi from the Cardinal Glennon Children's Medical Center in St. Louis, Missouri, explained, and I'm quoting her, that when we use something like diphenhydramine, which is Benadryl, to help us sleep at night, we're actually using it for its side effect, not for its treatment, which is to fight allergies. Aside from the primary side effect of drowsiness and fatigue, ZQIL may cause headaches, tremors, fast and irregular heartbeat. That's not a good trade-off, folks. Just remember, sometimes the cure is much worse than the disease. Okay, she goes on to say that's even more of a problem because 41% of people take over-the-counter sleeping pills for a year or longer. Hardly a short-term solution. They're not just taking it because they've had one rotten bad day. They're taking it every day. All right. A 2015 study from the University of Washington discovered a link between higher risk of developing dementia, which this includes Alzheimer's, and the use of anticholinergic medications like Benadryl. Has anybody ever told you that before? So if somebody calls me and says, is there any cure for Alzheimer's? Yeah, don't develop it in the first place. And this is one of the plausible mechanisms by which we're destroying all our people, by giving them drugs. I just mentioned earlier that touching and hugging and holding hands and probably massages. So if you need to go to a massage therapist, hey, I'd rather you spend $70 going to a massage therapist than taking a sleeping pill. And you're probably saying, well, that's easy for you to say. That's $70. Yeah, I know, but you can put it to the test. Find out. Everything can be questioned. Well, take your sleeping pill. See how you feel in the morning when you feel groggy and you can't remember what you're supposed to do today. And if your memory starts becoming a little bit off or your mind is going downhill, then maybe if we look back, maybe it was a good investment to go to a massage therapist every so often. So some of the greatest reasons why we're developing Alzheimer's is because of all these drugs that destroy the brain. Holding hands is a lot better than a drug. Researchers at the University of Michigan determined that teenagers who have been prescribed medication for sleep difficulty or anxiety, they were up to 12 times more likely to abuse medications than those had never been prescribed them. Boy. A gentleman told me the other day that he Googled towns the size of Jacksonville, and Jacksonville, it has absolutely the highest amount of drug use and violence and criminal activity. And I would say that probably drugs are at the root of that. Did I push the button too late? Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you?
Good. Do you have your windows rolled up?
Yes, sir. Oh, the defroster's on. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. That's all right.
Okay, is that better?
Yeah. Thank you.
I have a quick question. I have some kind of, I'm going to say a rash or maybe a fungus or something that's on my feet, but it's only on the sides of my feet. It's not the toes, so I'm thinking it's not athlete's foot. What could it possibly be? It actually...
It could very easily be athlete's foot.
It's like little blisters that they dry up and then they become scaly.
Well, is it painful at all?
It's painful and itchy.
Well, I mean, one simple trial is just take apple cider vinegar on a clean washcloth and just wipe the area several times a day. And whatever you wear as far as socks, don't wear any type of fiber except pure wool. Or make it as high wool content as you can.
Well, you know, it actually, one of those little blisters actually went up, like, I guess, my ankle?
Yeah, sure.
So it can still be that? Okay.
Well, I mean, it can. I mean, that is the one, that is the great disadvantage of radio, is I don't have a television camera attached to your foot. Now, if you were a little bit more thoughtful, you would have had a television crew come out and film your foot for me and then send the... you know, the video to the radio station. That would have made it real easy. If it were me, these are just the simple things that I would try. And I realize there's other issues. Anytime that you see a persistent problem with the feet of any kind, always think of low levels of oxygen. So let me give you some examples. Toenails always become thicker, and they start looking gnarly when we don't get enough oxygen to the toes. It's just the way it is. And as a general rule, any infectious organism, they don't care for oxygen. Yes, if I had my way, I'd put you in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber and crank the pressure up to 5 atmospheres of oxygen, and you'd probably come out and go, oh, is this how I'm supposed to feel all day long? Well, I like it, because oxygen is one of the greatest healing mechanisms of the... And, of course, that's all God designed. So the other thing that I would look at, I always tend to look at the kidneys. I think the kidneys are like a game changer. So anytime the kidneys...
I did have a kidney infection a few weeks ago.
Oh, boy. Well, anytime the kidneys are weakened, you're going to find stuff crop up on the feet. But then again, if there's blisters on the feet, did you take an antibiotic? Because I can tell you right now...
Yes, sir, I did.
The biggest skin problems I see are the ones following antibiotic use. So it could be just some form of allergic reaction. And the blisters, that's also a giveaway that it could be allergic reaction. You know how smart I am? Let me tell you.
Yes. I'm so spot on.
Oh, I was just joking about that. Well, I'm so smart that I can figure out when someone calls me from the ER and I say, who is this? And they send me a picture on their phone. And I go, I don't recognize you. And they say, it's me. I'm going, who? Well, you can't even tell who the person is by looking at them when they've had a bad reaction to antibiotic. Not the only ones, obviously, but I'd say as a general rule, the worst, most wicked, toxic, allergic reactions to drugs or to antibiotics. So if I can see the worst ones, then the minimal ones are easy. So I tell you what, you want to see a child's skin look like they have leprosy? If they have allergic reaction to an antibiotic, it'll do that every single time. But that's the body's way of discharging and getting rid of it. So... you can soak your feet in Epsom salt to help draw it out.
Okay.
Or you can go to the beach today. Which do you prefer?
Oh, I love to go to the beach today.
Well, see, your defroster was on because it's 32 degrees below zero where you are, and you're going to have to go downhill to the beach to get to 85 degrees, right?
Right. Oh, man.
Anyway, but if you soak your feet in a couple cups of Epsom salt and hot water, just draw all that poison out in a... You know what I would do if it were me?
What?
I would just take advantage of either limes or lemons. I don't know which one's going to work the best. Maybe lemons. But if you were to go to the store and buy... there's some grocery stores that you can go and one lemon will cost you $1.50, and there's other ones that you can buy 15 lemons for $1.50. I'll let you choose which one you want to go to. But if you start drinking lemon water all day long, that will very gently and generously help your liver... clear toxic waste and debris.
Okay.
Or if you have access to a sauna, install your body in the sauna and sweat it out.
Okay.
I hope that helps you.
These are all great suggestions. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. Have a good day,
bye-bye.
Ma'am. Bye-bye.
You too.
Thank you, ma'am. I appreciate your phone call. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If you want to call and ask a question or make a comment, that's all good. I would probably, after I wipe my feet down with apple cider vinegar and soak them in castor oil, I think I'd come back and just cover them with olive oil. Olive oil is really hard to beat. I was reading the other day that, the tabernacle that's written about in the Old Testament, where there's the Holy of Holies, well, they had lamps. And these lamps had a burning flame. Would you care to guess what oil was used to light the lamps and keep them burning? Olive oil. Now, I've never tried that. I haven't gone to an olive grove, crushed the olives, then put the oil in my lamp to burn it. But it's worth a try. If somebody can just point me toward an olive orchard, I'll go try it out tonight. All right, where was I? All right, let me see, what else did I have here? You know what almost shocks me as I read about this stuff? Talking about the drug called Ambien to induce sleep. I was reading a story about a woman. She was prescribed a sleeping pill. Actually, here's a story from yesterday. We'll call this woman Nina. That's not a real name, but I'm going to call her Nina. But to make a long story, she was telling me that when she was in the hospital for maybe it was a surgery or a procedure, I don't remember, that the nurses just insisted that she take Ambien. She was going to need it. Now, I don't know. Does every patient that goes to the hospital get prescribed drugs to make them sleep? I do not know. I don't work in a hospital. I bet you there's some nurses or doctors listening right now that do, so they would probably know just from the powers of observation. Anyway, but she told me that she saw two gypsies in her hospital room. Now, when I say saw two gypsies, we're talking about having a very, very vivid, very lifelike dream that she was inserted into. But I tell you what, the side effects were so bad for Nina. She said, no more Ambien for me under any circumstances. It's bizarre what I saw. But you know what amazes me, though? I was reading a story about a woman. She was prescribed a drug called Ambien, and she has no recollection. But a couple of days after it happened, she wakes up in a jail cell. And to find out that she had, I think she had a glass of wine and then Ambien, which I know you don't mix alcohol and drugs together, but she did. Maybe that wasn't explained to her by her physician when she was prescribed the Ambien to help her sleep. So, yes, drugs are the solution for every problem. Just take a drug. You know what I hear from every human being? The doctor spent 10 minutes with me and they prescribed a drug. They spent 5 minutes with me and prescribed a drug. Anyway, I'll get back to the story momentarily. Good morning and welcome to the program. How are you doing?
Good morning. I just wanted to ask your opinion. I'm going to ask you and then hang up. My sister has gotten on the forks over knives diet. Have you heard of that?
Yes,
And her cholesterol has gone way down, and she's had her blood test look great. My concern, I just wonder, you know, no meat, no oils, very low fats. She's trying to talk me into getting on the diet, but what I've heard from you, maybe short term, but I just was wondering, is that a real healthy diet long term?
Has she told you one stunning piece of information or research that really persuades you to pursue forks over knives? What is her main selling point?
They have a long video that they've watched and about showing all the great effects of it, lowering cholesterol, and I don't know. She watched a long video. I watched part of the video, and it was, I mean, anything can convince you, I think. You
of
know,
course.
If you,
very so, convincing, very compelling, right?
And she's trying to talk me, and I know she's had great results on it short term, but I just don't know that.
Well, let me say it this way, I'm being just as honest as I can be. So let's just say somebody's promoting a heavily vegetarian diet, okay?
Right.
And they're saying, do not eat meat. And you can, if I took a survey this morning on the radio and say, tell me all the reasons why you dislike meat or you choose not to eat it, I'm probably going to come up about, let's say about 80% of them have to do with it's cruel to animals. That's just my own research or observations or asking questions. And believe me, I don't judge people based on that. God lets you do what you want to do.
Right, sure.
And so you could say, let's look at the research on this. And the research shows definitely that when people tend to adopt a more vegetarian lifestyle, they probably have about 10 to 15% fewer health problems. And I would say that's true. But can I be the monkey wrench this morning? Because that's the role that I like to be anyway. I'm going to throw a monkey wrench. Maybe it has nothing to do with eating meat, but just the fact that you're eating more vegetables. See,
right,
that's the equation that I would work with, and I would tell every person listening today, if you choose to eat more vegetables, and in place of, you know, every recommendation that I give people would work. Like a lady told me yesterday, she said, if only you would have prescribed more bread and more pastries and more desserts, I'd be able to comply with the program.
Exactly. This diet, though, it's no oils, no butter, no dairy. It just seems so restrictive.
Well, let me counter it with this right here. So I'm going to just propose that maybe the reason these diets work initially is not because you're avoiding meat and oils and good fat. It's because you have switched gears and you have made a concerted effort to eat more vegetables, which are full of good things. I would agree with that. So I have nothing against that. Now, years ago, I think it was either 2009 or 2010, I was reading a study on what are called super centenarians. And these are people that are age 110 and above.
Ooh.
And they were able to locate about 400 of them for the purpose of evaluation. Like, oh my word, what's different about these folks? Do they have some type of superhuman blood protein that's called the fountain of youth? And, you know, they just live forever. But anyway, all the researchers were very disgusted by what they found, because they found no superhuman gene or super protein that they could market or sell or turn into a drug. So the study was considered a failure. And what blew the mind of all these researchers is half the time people were eating bacon and eggs for breakfast, and they were frying chicken and lard and bacon grease and stuff. But the point that I would make is, any time that you can lower your insulin levels, usually you tend to live a lot longer with less inflammation on your heart, and just fill in the blank, whatever you want. But it was very disturbing to these researchers that half the people would make their own fried chicken out of bacon grease.
Oh, how funny. Oh, my goodness.
So, yes, I hear it from both sides, but, you know, this is just my opinion. If you try to cut out all the... I'm going to get in big trouble for saying this.
Oh.
But I'm going to do it anyway, okay? You're not going to get in trouble. I'm going to get in trouble.
Right.
It's been my experience when I see people on a completely restricted protein diet. Now, let me start over here. Just for the sake of conversation, we have got to have what are called neurotransmitters. And those are chemicals that our body produces, like serotonin, norepinephrine, orexin, GABA-aminobutyric acid, dopamine. I mean, the last time I checked, all the cases of schizophrenia and bipolar disorder and Parkinson's disease, these are all dopamine deficiency diseases.
Right.
And so one of the things that you can find is if a person cuts out all oil and meat is they just all of a sudden have just about no personality. Not everyone. I'm just going to say the majority, because they can't make the neurotransmitters. They're made of protein.
Oh.
And the argument is, so what she's doing is in the short term, She may be doing a good thing, because if you do not eat protein for a short season, what your immune system will do is it will go and start removing any damaged, drained proteins from the tissues to kick them out and get rid of them, and I think that's a good thing. That's one of the reasons that fasting can be like a godsend. There is nothing wrong with a person getting stressed and looking at themselves in the mirror and say, what am I doing? I am not living my life. I'm not even having fun. And they say, I'm sick of it. I'm going to go in a different direction. I'm not even going to eat for the next 3 days.
Right.
I sat on a plane one time next to a man that took up my seat and his seat, and that was just great, great fun, having this huge body rubbing up against me the whole flight. And, you know, if it was my wife rubbing up against me with her hands or her legs, that'd be fine. But this big hairy dude, he was so huge, I don't even know how I squeezed into the the seat, but half of my body was hanging off the whole flight because there was no room for me. But anyway, he had no trouble scarfing down a bag of Oreos and, you know, some Twizzlers, and he didn't just need one Coke, he needed 14 Cokes, and usually I was going, here, can I help you hold your snack, sir? Yes, that's very thoughtful of you, thank you. But anyway, that's the other extreme proposition. So that guy, he probably needs fasting for 3 days just to kind of reset and so he can reevaluate. But if she's not eating protein and fat, this party can go on only for so long, because in that study of super centurions, they didn't find one vegetarian in the group, not one.
Really?
Not one. They're always meat eaters. And so I realize there's a very, do you know what the word ideology means?
Yes.
I would say there's a difference between true religion and ideology. Because there's some ideologies that say, if you don't believe like we do, we're going to kill you. You're an infidel, right?
Right.
And so I don't call that a religion. I call that a toxic ideology. But anyway, there's an ideology that all meat is bad and we need to worship Mother Earth and, you know, become one with the universe. Oh, that's just a big bunch of baloney. But anyway, God gave us all these things to eat, and they're good for us. But you know what I can tell you? I can easily look up research that shows that people that eat meats, they also eat a bunch of other stuff they probably shouldn't, like the
guy. That's very true.
So when you look at surveys, it shows that meat eaters have the highest intake of junk food. Now, it doesn't have to be that way, but that's just the way it is. So.
Right.
Anyway, but long term, her brain is mainly. See, do you know what would make me nervous? If I looked at her cholesterol and it starts dipping below 145, I would get really nervous, because what she's doing is her cholesterol is so low that she can't make enough to meet the brain's needs. It's only a matter of time before she starts having memory issues. And I sure don't want that to happen.
Right. I know you look at sometimes people go, because her cholesterol was around 200, and she's been on this diet for 3 months, and it's gone down to about 145, 150.
Well, that actually very much scares me, because your body starts shutting down once cholesterol gets that low.
Right, that's what...
Kind of hard to convince a person of that when you're in throes of it, but just, you know, we want to keep an open mind, because at some point we need to encourage her to actually... see, I don't think eggs are bad.
Oh, I love eggs.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
And I love butter.
Good.
That helps. That helps. I just kind of wondering about it.
Well, anyway, it just is what it is.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
I really appreciate your insight.
Thank you
so
for your
much.
Phone call.
You
bye-bye.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Bye. Oh, you too. Thank you, man. Bye-bye. All right. If you'd like to join me on the radio this morning, what I should say is this. What if a person dominated their diet with... vegetables or non-meat sources of very, very clean, wholesome foods, I'd say, hey, that's probably good. But what do you do over time if your reserve of protein starts getting so low and the fat starts getting sucked out of your brain? I mean, that just... You know what would be a definition of madness? If you're a professional bodybuilder and you think that every day you've got to starve yourself to achieve the perfect physique, you're going to have a mental breakdown at some point. It's just going to happen. You can't do that every single day. You might actually have to eat a little bit of cheesecake every so often. All right, if you want to join me on the radio this morning, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. Okay. I know you've heard this before, and this is not rocket science. Actually, we'll go to the phone lines first. Good morning, and welcome to the program. Thanks for your call.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I'm a 71-year-old woman that has psoriatic arthritis, rosacea, sarcoidosis. I've been on every kind of arthritis medication you can think of, and I don't take it very well because I have severe reactions. And I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
I can give you some ideas. I have found every case of psoriatic arthritis or psoriasis, the trigger is going to be wheat. So when a person eats wheat, it's triggering a wicked response by the immune system to generate antibodies against it. And if those antibodies and white blood cells settle near the skin, you get chronic low-grade inflammation. The other thing is a chronic low-grade infection. I see those all the time with rosacea, sarcoidosis, and psoriatic arthritis. So have you ever heard of a ketogenic diet?
A what?
It's called ketogenic. That's spelled K-E-T-O, keto.
And then I haven't.
Okay. Well, it's a diet, and I'm trying to see if I had this information in front of me, because sometimes I read things that are very intriguing, but a ketogenic diet is where the dominant calorie, you know how a newborn baby has just beautiful, soft, creamy skin?
Yes.
Did you have any babies when you were younger?
Yes, I did.
Was it fun to hold them?
Yes.
Now, if somebody were to hold me like a baby, they would say, your skin's kind of hairy. They probably wouldn't get much pleasure out of that. But a newborn baby, they have just beautiful, perfect, healthy skin. And that's a kind of a testimony. When the baby's in the womb, it gets the best. It's like the greatest buffet of all time. The greatest nutrients go to the baby. Even if mom is not eating so great, they still get the premium select dose of nutrients to make sure they can grow and develop properly. But a baby, when they come into the world, their diet is mainly fat. So if you break down mother's breast milk, 54% is pure fat, 7% is protein. So it's got just enough protein to make the baby grow and develop, but it doesn't have too much. If you give a child too much protein, like on formula, which is 9% protein, you make their head get so big it can't even fit into the child carrier. I mean, haven't you been to Walmart before and seen a mother push the baby around in the shopping cart, and you remarked, wow, that's a pretty big head. Now, that's not trying to make anybody feel bad, but that's what happens when you get too much protein. So psoriasis, sarcoidosis, and rosacea is usually a reaction to too much protein. That's one of the reasons why I like lowering protein and increasing fat, because you're trying to get the immune system to become more quiet and not overreact and generate antibodies. But from my experience, wheat is like a game changer, meaning if you avoid it.
Okay.
What else would you like to know?
That's it. Thank you very much.
Yes, thanks for your phone call. Bye-bye.
Mm-hmm.
I know this. I've seen people with sarcoidosis just get to the point where they're sick of it, and they decide, okay, something's got to give. What do? I'll do anything. And sometimes I see all the changes when they start the process of fasting, because that allows your immune system to completely clean out. Good morning. Thanks a whole bunch for your phone call today. You've got to turn that radio off. Thanks.
Good morning, Dr. Martin. This is Edward from Longview.
Yes.
Yeah. I was wanting to get a blood test before I came to see you, and I have a phone number for you.
Is it your phone number?
Is that all right?
Is it your phone number?
No, it's the drug place. CPLDRL.
Yeah, just call my office number and just give me that phone number, and I'll be glad to take care of all that for you.
Okay, I can get it within a couple of days, and it's
right,
fairly inexpensive. So
did you,
whatever you need, let them know when you call, and I'll just.
Oh yeah, you betcha. Did you see a phone number on your cell phone, 445-0558?
Yeah, I saw you call me, but I didn't answer it in time.
Did you notice I called about 8 times?
No, my phone's kind of wacky sometimes.
Oh, that's all right. Anyway, I just wanted you to know that I really did try to return your phone call every time.
Oh, I saw that you did.
Okay, all right, good deal. I didn't want you thinking I forgot about you, though.
Yeah, but I'm doing pretty good on my diet. I found something I can eat that's sweet that has no sugar, no starch in it.
Well, good. All right. See, there, it makes you laugh and giddy just thinking about that stuff, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Well, listen, if you are trying, then I'm very pleased and proud of you. So that means a lot to me. And so all these things, the purpose of a blood test, we're just going to measure you. We're going to see what changes. And if you see some changes that are positive, won't that encourage you to keep going?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Yeah. Way to go. I like the idea of you living. You've got a bunch of people that love you and need you.
That's right. I appreciate you, Doctor.
Yeah, I appreciate you a whole bunch. Thanks.
Your wisdom is great.
Well, thank you for your kindness. Have a good day, Edward.
All right, you too.
Bye-bye. All right, back to that story. The woman was taking Ambien by prescription. She drank a glass of wine, and 2 days later she wakes up in jail in her pajamas. So what happened was she got up in the middle of the night without even knowing that she was up, and she ran over three people. Two of them are dead, and there's an 18-month-old that has permanent brain injuries or permanent brain damage because of the Ambien. But you got to understand, it's different. And I'm not telling you what's right or wrong. You make up your own decision. But if somebody knowingly drinks a lot of alcohol to the point where all of their judgments and reflexes and everything that goes along with safely driving a car, if that goes flying out of the window because they've taken a handful of illegal drugs and a whole bunch of alcohol, well, that's criminal, isn't it? They should know better. And so what's the punishment for that? I don't know, life in prison for killing two people, but the 18-month-old baby is going to be major brain damage the rest of their life. And for all I know, that child could end up in one of these state-run homes for the rest of their life while they're on Earth. And I just hate that. Hate it. So what was the... So the lady, she hired a criminal defense team, and they expounded upon the research concerning Ambien, and I think she had 3 months of prison time. Probably, I should rephrase that, probably 3 months at the county jail, which would probably be a cakewalk. Maybe not, but I'm just saying. 3 months and 10 years probation. Now, does that seem fitting? Do we just let people off because they were taking the drug? The doctor prescribed the drug? Okay, I don't know what the answer is, but it's just very, very saddening, disconcerting. It's just all, it's evil. That's just my opinion. Anyway. All right, if you'd like to join me on the radio, 903-586-5257. If you don't know what it's like to have really, really good sleep, if there was one metric that we could work toward to improve your health, sleeping deeply, figuring out how to do that is worth everything. Oh, do I appreciate your phone call.
Hello?
Turn your radio off, please.
Okay. Hi, Dr. Morgan.
Hello, how are you?
My daughter's a husband has had irritable bowel syndrome for years and years, and now he has an enlarged prostate. He can eat vegetables and fish, but he's a vegetarian, and I was just wondering what could be done for him.
Well, besides vegetables and fish, I would ask a question, and this is not me being judgmental. I'm just trying to figure it out. How much grain does he consume, and then how much sugar does he consume?
I really don't know, but he probably eats it.
Well, and the reason why I'm saying that, and they did a study just on women only. There wasn't one man in the study, so forgive me but I'm just quoting what I've read. And what they did was they tried for 2 weeks no sugar whatsoever for those that had severe irritable, and what they did was, I think it was very wise, they selected women that just weren't responding really well to medical treatments for IBS, meaning drugs. And so they said, can we just try no sugar of any kind for 2 weeks? You know what the cure rate was in 2 weeks? 95% cure.
Wow.
Now what I want to do is I want to turn this around and go a little bit deeper. When a newborn baby comes into the world, they're supposed to, and this is God's design, not mine, I'm not smart enough to figure this one out, the baby kind of corkscrews and turns through the birth canal and pops out, and you've got a brand new baby. Umbilical cord still attached, but what happens is when the child is in the womb, that is completely a sterile environment. There's no organisms growing in there, but when the baby breaks through the placenta or comes through the cervix, all those beneficial bacteria or flora or microbes that are clinging to mother's birth canal or the vaginal area, they completely jump off mama onto the baby, and they cling to the baby. So that's the child's very first exposure to the outside world. And so the immune system becomes activated. So here's a principle. If you have enough beneficial microbes lining the tissues of the gut, there probably won't be anything such as irritable bowel syndrome. Now, I don't know anything about... Did you say this was your nephew?
It's my granddaughter's husband.
Oh, well, that's like a nephew.
He's in his 30s.
Well, if we were to go back, I would only venture a guess we're going to have one of two stories. And this is the one I don't believe I'm going to hear. We're not going to hear that when he was a newborn baby that he had no illnesses whatsoever. We're going to find out most likely that the kid had a lot of sore throat and ear infections and infections that required antibiotics, because the more antibiotics that you give a human being, the more IBS you have later on in life. You ever heard that before?
Yes, yes.
And so what I was going to say is, so if he eats fish and vegetables and he finds out that's the only thing that's really safe for him to eat that doesn't, like, stir up a lot of trouble in his gut.
That's exactly right.
Well, we're going to find out. You've heard the phrase before that you are what you eat.
Right.
And I would say there's truth to that, but in his case, I'm going to say that he is what he eats plus what he can absorb and transport into the bloodstream. So this is just a very simple concept. If he's harboring this thick, luxurious coating of beneficial bacteria, probiotics, then he's going to be able to absorb more, and his body's going to be happier, and he's going to have a lot less inflammation. But without that, your body is just predisposed toward allergies, irritations, irritants, poor absorption of nutrients. And so that's the way that I look at it. So every case of IBS that I've ever seen over 30 years, they always have an allergy. Or they have a different way of saying it is they are eating some food that's generating inflammation within their body. It's just easy to blame that on wheat and corn and sugar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the way that you get through this is, number one, you're the 30-year-old. Did you say this is your granddaughter's husband?
Yes.
Does that mean he's your grandson-in-law?
Grandson-in-law, yes.
I don't think I've ever used that term before. See, there
he is.
I was all confused. But anyway, but you love him, and he's all yours. So
yes.
If they did there's a very simple functional test called a comprehensive digestive stool analysis. And to me, the lab that I use, they charge $285 to run that profile. I don't make a penny off of it. I never charge for lab tests. If they pay the lab, we call it good. But what they'll do is they'll culture all the dominant bacteria and organisms that live inside of him. But what if his test comes back that shows that he doesn't have enough good guys? What if it shows that he has all these toxic forms of bacteria or yeast living inside of him that are generating inflammation? That may be an aha moment. Because if you can measure that very accurately and you show it to him, he might go, no one has ever thought of doing this to me before, and I've been to all these GI doctors and I've seen all these experts, and the best they can offer is giving me massive doses of Bentyl and steroids and other anti-inflammatories. But what if we never get to the root cause of the problem? And that's the maddening thing about me, is there's a special super-duper emphasis on not figuring these things out, just giving drugs to control symptoms. It's just madness, if you ask me.
Absolutely.
Just like I read earlier, who's going to have a lot more cancer? People taking Ambien, sleeping pills. But does the doctor say you can take these sleeping pills, but you're going to get cancer? No, they don't mention that little detail. So if he did a stool analysis, that may be a life-changing moment for him, because he can look at it and go, really? I didn't realize that I was so messed up on the inside. What do I do about that? And I go, well, I'm glad you asked. These are the steps that you can take. And then let them decide. But if he goes the rest of his life saying, you know what, this is just the way it is, it's the way it's always going to be, there's no hope for me, I've tried everything. He may have tried everything that powerful prescription pharmaceutical drugs has to offer, but it doesn't mean he's tried something that can truly restore the function of his body.
I don't think he's tried anything. What was the name of that test, comprehensive?
Well, can I tell you the name of the laboratory?
Okay.
Well, actually, the test is called a Oh, it's called a GI panel for gastrointestinal, but sometimes it's called a comprehensive digestive stool analysis. Sometimes they call it CDSA for short.
Okay.
But there's plenty of labs. They like it. All it requires is your grandson gives a specimen of a stool or a bowel movement, puts it in three or four or five test tubes and ships it to the laboratory, and they do what they do best, and they analyze it. But they can tell him, is he digesting everything perfectly? But that's one of the things they measure also. They do look at these antibodies to see if maybe he's having a reaction to corn or to dairy or to wheat. And if a test comes back and they show high antibodies against dairy products, what does that tell you? It tells you that if you eat dairy products, you're asking for a whole lot of inflammation to be generated in the lining of the gut, in which, if you ask me, probably 90% plus of a person's entire immune system is going to be found right there in the gut. So, you know what the fun part is?
What's
that? He's 30 years old.
He's 35.
Mm-hmm. But he's got his whole life ahead of him where he can love his wife and play with kids and run through meadows and play.
He loves that. He loves the two children. I mean, he plays with them all the time, but he's had this for years and years and years.
Well, he can turn over in bed tomorrow or a month from now and say, I had that for years and years and years, and now I am free from that thorn in the flesh that has killed me. So it can
What is the name of the lab that he can call? Or
there's a lab called, well, you got to get a doctor to order it for you.
Okay.
The lab is called Diagnostics. Let me spell that for you.
I've got it. Diagnostics.
TECH, like tech.
Oh, tech. Okay.
Diagnostics. TECHS.
Okay.
But they're out of they're up on the East Coast, West Coast, Northwest Coast. But they're very easy to work with, and I like them because I mean they're just spot on. Can I tell you a story real quick?
Sure.
A buddy of mine comes to see me, and he throws down the gauntlet. He said, "I'm not changing my ways." He said, "I eat at Whataburger every day. I take clients out for lunch." He says, "But there's something I've never told you." I said, "Well, what is it, Jeff?" He said, "My stomach and my gut hurts me every single day, and it's just tore up." And so I said, "Well, would you be willing to do a test?" Because I always think, for the ones that, tell me they're not going to do anything, but they still come to see me anyway, I think, well, why don't you come to see me if you don't want to figure this? But anyway, he said, "Let's do it." So I said, "Let's do a stool analysis." And in this particular test, I like the ones where they do parasitology profiles also. We're just checking for foreign bugs. It's easy to do. And so the lab director never calls me. I think he's from either Pakistan or India, but he's got an accent that's kind of hard for me to understand. But he starts talking 90 miles an hour to me on the phone. I'm going, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, what are you saying to me?" He says, "I have never seen anything like this, Dr. Morgan." I'm going, "What are you talking about?" Anyway, this buddy of mine, he had more, I think it was called, I can't remember the organ, it was either Dientamoeba fragilis or Dientamoeba or histoblastomosis or something like Blastocystis hominis. It's just an amoeba. But the lab director was freaked out because this is the highest amount of amoebas he's ever seen a human being. So I call up Jeff, I said, "I've got good news and I've got bad news." And I said, "Well, what's the bad news?" And he says, "Well, if you want to go get a drug to fix your amoeba infection, that means you can't drink beer for about a week." He's going, "Oh, man," because he likes to drink beer also. But then again, you can't take that drug and drink beer. It'll wreck you. But anyway, his problems were completely cured within about 3 days. But for 7 years, he had horrible pain in his gut every single day, some days worse than others. Yeah, he had some good days.
He has good days, but mostly it's this, and then he's got an enlarged prostate, and they say
he's got some infection of some kind. And so for all I know, maybe the prostate is swollen because of a horrible side effect from a drug that he's taking. But just like I told you the story about Jeff, It's kind of remarkable because, you know, when the lab director calls me saying, Dr. Morgan, he's got parasites more than I've ever seen. Well, at least I had something to work with. But all his issues resolved just by correctly identifying what the root cause of the problem is. Now, what I don't know is, I don't know where Jeff got the parasites. It could have been that somebody didn't wash their hands after going to the bathroom and they had them. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not fun to think about, though, is it?
Not at all.
But this grandson of yours, that's what I'm going to call him, if right. he's got a swollen prostate and his gut's torn up, isn't it just high time that we look at maybe a different way to look at this?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm going to call him right away.
Hey, yeah, do that. But the lab is called Diagnostics, and they have what's a digestive stool analysis. And, hey, $285. I know that's a lot of money, but do you value suffering?
Not at all. No, well, not at all, if not it would cure this.
That's right. Well, let me know what happens with him. I'm sure rooting for him.
Okay. Thank you, sir. And
thank you, ma'am.
For all you do.
You're welcome.
God
bye-bye.
Bless.
God bless bye-bye. You. Bye-bye. Oh, isn't that sweet? I need a few God blesses today. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line once again open at 903-586-5257. We've got about three minutes left. We can take another phone call, or if not, I can gladly share with you the information that I've been thinking of. I came across a study yesterday as I was waiting for school to let out. There was a research team, and see, I think numbers are accurate if they're being honest. I realize almost all the drugs, and I, to be fair, there are so many nutritional supplements. The companies, they set aside money from each and every sale to deal with lawsuits because of false advertising. I know you don't know that, but there's a lot of nutritional companies that are fly by night, but every sale that they make, they put aside some money to deal with fines for false, misleading advertising or making claims that simply aren't untrue. So what you have is you have all these companies that are promising you everything from these nutritional supplements, but they really don't have the research to back it up, but they'll falsify it and they'll make it up just so they can make money, and people want to believe. Anyway, but drug companies do the same things. They completely lie about details of the studies. They certainly lie about the side effects. But anyway, where was I going with that? Oh, yeah. You want to improve your health, and you really want to believe that it's just as simple as taking a pill. Well, okay. Maybe that's the truth, but usually your health spiraled out of control a long time ago. And you've got to be willing to measure yourself and look at yourself in the mirror. But here's what I want to talk about in the last minute that I have. I have 1 minute. It was proven in this study that when they put a people for about 30 days on a very low-calorie starvation diet, it was just 1,000 calories a day, and they said, we're going to try 1,000 calories from pure carbohydrates, or we're going to take 1,000 calories just from pure protein, or 1,000 calories from fat. And the ones that were on 1,000 calories of fat, they lost 0.9 pounds every single day. The ones that were on pure protein, they lost an average of like 0.6 pounds every day. Weight loss. Carbohydrates, I think it was 0.24. And so I'm having forever people walk in the door saying, I can't eat butter or olive oil or avocados, they're fattening. That couldn't be further from the truth. Your body is hardwired to produce insulin in response to sugar. And when you do that, there can be a cascade of events that will totally wreck your sleep. Sometimes I think sleep is improved if I can just convince a person to eat more fat and less carbohydrates. I've seen that over and over and over again. Anyway, thank you for joining me today. We're out of time. You're listening to Health Essentials, FM 90.3, Jacksonville. Tyler Long.